From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Jeopardy! Host Alex Trebek says he means to be among the tiny few who beat pancreatic cancer's cruel odds. Just 9% of people diagnosed with pancreatic cancer live for 5 more years. Why is it so deadly? How is it treated? We speak with Meryl Bemnett, an oncology nurse who lost her sister-in-law to pancreatic cancer less than 6 months after she was diagnosed. And Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe, deputy director of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins, describes progress in treating pancreatic cancer by harnessing the power of the immune system.
If you can activate the immune system to see a patient's cancer, you have the ability to educate their immune system so that if the cancer tries to come back, the immune system reacts right away.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy!, sounded determined and even upbeat last week, promising to fight his diagnosis of stage 4 pancreatic cancer. After all, said Trebek, who is 78, he still has 3 years to serve on his Jeopardy! Contract. People who know this cancer realize the fight Trebek faces. There's no test to detect pancreatic cancer. It grows slowly, but by the time it's found, it is often advanced and moving fast. It's the third leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States, and deaths are predicted to rise as the population ages. Last November, we spoke to people with a deep grasp of the toll of pancreatic cancer. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a leading cancer researcher who is deputy director of the Kimmel Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins. First, we met Meryl Bemnett. She's an oncology nurse and directs the clinical nurse education team at the pharmaceutical company Ipsen. In 2005, she lost her sister-in-law, Laura, to pancreatic cancer. I asked how Laura discovered she had the disease.
Well, my sister-in-law, my brother, my niece, and my nephew had moved from Florida to Maine, and they were having their first fall Thanksgiving with the leaves, and she went to the store with my niece and nephew to pick up the turkey, and she went to pick up the turkey and had excruciating pain and wound up in the ER.
That was on pain, pain where?
In her abdomen. Mm-hmm. And pain to the extent where she could not walk.
Oh, my.
So ended up in the ER and ended up being diagnosed within 2 days with metastatic pancreatic cancer.
Metastatic meaning it had already spread?
It had already spread, yes.
What went through your mind when you heard the news?
When my brother called me as an oncology nurse, I knew exactly what could transpire for Laura, and it felt like the earth fell out from under my feet. And the burden of it as an oncology nurse and being a family member was hard for myself and for my niece and my nephew in particular.
Walk us through what unfolded for your family.
Well, Laura was diagnosed. She went, obviously my brother called me. I asked him and told him that he should get a second opinion because pancreatic cancer, even though there's not a lot of treatment for it, in particular, I wanted him to go to an academic center, thinking in my mind at the time that there might be more options.
And this was 2005.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So they did go for a second opinion to a major cancer institute and ultimately came home and just started chemotherapy drugs. So by that time, though, because it was metastatic, that was in the beginning of November, she died by April 6th, the following year.
And so you said it was especially hard on her children.
It was especially hard, especially for a 12-year-old daughter and my nephew, yes.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with oncology nurse Meryl Bemnett, who lost her sister-in-law, Laura, to pancreatic cancer. Last month, the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network organized a walk in Catonsville to raise awareness and funds for research. How did you get involved in the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network?
As the director for the clinical nurse educator team at Ipsen Biopharmaceuticals, Ipsen's main purpose, or one of their primary purposes, is to work with pancreatic cancer. And about 2 years ago, I started to get involved and have done a number of walks and been involved in their Purple Stride and Advocacy Day in D.C.
Purple Stride is the name of the walk.
Purple Stride is the name of the walk for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And my company supports it, so I thought it was the perfect way for me to give back and to remember Laura. And also, it's become my passion. It has become my goal so that we can increase awareness, increase understanding for this under-recognized and often fatal disease.
What's it like to attend an event where everybody has this connection?
It is inspiring, and it is like a warm hug, because you have people that are going through the disease and are survivors, and then family members and caregivers, and everybody puts their arms around everybody so that you are supporting one another through this journey.
So what difference do you think it makes to be an advocate for curing pancreatic cancer?
I think the difference is that people just don't hear about it. People don't know about it. It's not in the common know. It's not in common day-to-day, like breast cancer or lung cancer or a lot of other cancers. So I think people just don't know that if you do have an ache or a pain and it's not going away, follow up, go to your healthcare provider, see what's going on. Don't ignore it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Meryl Bemnett is an oncology nurse, the director of the clinical nurse education team at the pharmaceutical company Ipsen. We're talking this morning about pancreatic cancer. Quick break here on the record. Then we'll speak to an oncologist from the Sydney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center about what advances there are in treating pancreatic cancer. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Pancreatic cancer is among the deadliest of cancers. The American Cancer Society estimates that of the 57,000 people likely to be diagnosed with the disease in the U.S. this year, more than 45,000 will die. There is no early detection test for pancreatic cancer, so it often goes undetected until it has reached an advanced stage. That's why people who can say they survived pancreatic cancer, like Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, are rare. We asked oncologist Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe to talk to us last November about risk factors for pancreatic cancer, as well as advances in treating it. Dr. Jaffe is deputy director of the Sydney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins. We started with where the pancreas is located and what it does.
So the pancreas is located in the back of the abdomen, and it has two major functions. One function is to secrete enzymes that then get into your small bowel or your GI tract and help to digest food. The other function is to secrete insulin. And so insulin regulates sugar usage by different organs and cells in your body. And so if you don't have enough insulin, then you get diabetes.
Mm. What are the risk factors for pancreatic cancer?
So there are a number of risk factors for pancreatic cancer. We now know that certainly cigarette smoking has twice as much of a chance of getting pancreatic cancer if you're a cigarette smoker. Not quite as much if you're a drinker. So, and when I say drinker, it's really abuse of alcohol, 6 to 10 glasses of alcohol a day. However, the most important risk factors are family history. So if you have one family member, you're twice as likely to get pancreatic cancer. If you have more than one, it could be up to 7 times as likely. Also, there are two conditions that happen in the pancreas that may also be associated with increased risk, one of which is called chronic pancreatitis. And this is basically an inflammation of the pancreas that's there over time. So it's not acute like an infection, but it's there for a long time. And you have a twofold increase, or you're twice as likely to get pancreatic cancer if you've had chronic pancreatitis. The other is something called cysts. These are basically non-cancerous lesions in the pancreas, but they have the ability to turn into cancer. And again, you become twice as likely to get pancreatic cancer. There's been a lot of work in diabetes. Acute diabetes doesn't seem to be a risk factor. If you've had chronic diabetes or diabetes for a long time, you have a slightly increased risk, not quite twice as likely, but getting close to twice as likely to get pancreatic cancer.
Before we leave the idea of risk factors, I want to make sure I understand. It seemed to me you were saying the big one is family, is genetic. So it's really more things you can't control than things you can that can put you in the position of getting pancreatic cancer.
Unfortunately, right now, that seems to be the case. And there seems to be some genetic alterations, some genes that are associated with pancreatic cancer. I think the one that most people hear about would be the BRCA genes, right?
So the same ones that are put you at risk for breast cancer.
Exactly. So there's also a risk for pancreatic cancer with those genes.
So how do people typically find out they have this cancer?
This is the problem. Pancreatic cancer, you don't have the symptoms until often it's too late because it's sitting in the back of the abdomen. And so as it's growing, until it actually hits a blood vessel or a duct causing obstruction or a nerve causing pain, you may not know you have it. Now, sometimes you'll have nonspecific symptoms for about 3 to 6 months before you get diagnosed. These nonspecific symptoms are due to the fact that you're not making enough enzymes to digest food. And so a lot of times, both patients and physicians think that they're just having gastric distress or GI distress. But in fact, it's because it's early signs of pancreatic cancer. The other issue is that sometimes these patients will have acute onset diabetes because, again, the cells that make insulin are sitting in the pancreas. So if they're affected, the first sign may be a lack of insulin, so diabetes.
And so that may get addressed, but the pancreatic cancer does not get addressed right away.
Right, because we have no early screening methods for this disease other than if someone has symptoms to take a look and see if it's there.
What is the outlook for developing an earlier screen, an earlier test?
There is a lot of effort that's being funded by the NIH, that's being funded by Lustgarten Foundation to try and find, and by Stand Up to Cancer, actually, together with the Lustgarten Foundation, to try and find ways to screen early. And in fact, I'm part of a grant, a national grant, to look at screening early and then trying to develop vaccines to prevent pancreatic cancer. So we all know that human papillomavirus vaccine prevents cervical cancer. I've been working to develop a vaccine for high-risk pancreatic cancer patients that will prevent pancreatic cancer. But we first need a screening method to identify those patients at risk.
Talk to us about the two primary kinds of pancreatic cancer. What are they? How are they different?
Right. So right now, have figured out that there are two kinds based on the cells that they start in the pancreas. So we have something called adenocarcinoma, and those are from the ductal cells, the cells that are making the enzymes that digest your food. The other is called neuroendocrine. So the most common one is the ductal. That's the majority of pancreatic cancer patients that we think of. The neuroendocrine comes from cells that really support, this comes from cells from the neurons that support the pancreas. And every organ has neurons that innervate their ability to function. And so we call it neuroendocrine because it's also regulated by endocrine type hormones. This is a totally different cancer. It can arise in many different organs. It also arises in the pancreas. And in this case, this is a cancer that is more easily treatable. People live 8 to 10 years with this type of cancer, as long as they get treated for the symptoms of the cancer. So two very different types of cancer.
How many years can somebody with the first kind, the adenocarcinoma type?
The adenocarcinoma, right. So the adenocarcinoma type, the most common form, which is probably 95% or greater, that form, the 5-year survival has increased, sadly, only from 5% to 8% overall in probably the 30 years that I've been working on this cancer. It's very sad. That's the sad part of it, but I do have to say that we've learned a lot over the past decade or so as far as how this develops and what may be regulating this cancer. And once you understand how it develops and how it's regulated, you could develop the best types of interventions to hopefully treat this cancer in the future. And I think we're starting to have some treatments that may be working for this cancer.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe, oncologist and deputy director of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about diagnosing pancreatic cancer, and we'll talk about treating it. Tell me what advances you're seeing in treatment.
The first advances have been really chemotherapy. It doesn't sound very sexy, but chemotherapy does work in this disease now. Again, we used to say that pancreatic cancer patients had a 3 to 6 month life expectancy if the pancreatic cancer was not surgically treatable, and only 20 to 30% are surgically treatable, unfortunately, because we pick up on this cancer too late.
And surgically treatable means essentially cutting the tumor out.
Cutting the tumor out. So you can cut the tumor out. The 5-year survival, though, is only about 20 to 30%, but it's still better than
5 to 8%.
Yes. However, now the chemotherapies have moved the survival benefit from 3 to 6 months to probably around 10 to 11 months. Now, that's an average, so there are people who are living 1, 2, sometimes 3 years with this cancer. So that's the chemotherapy. So that's been the first major advance that we've seen, that we have better chemotherapy. Now, immunotherapy, which is a new area, of course, everyone's talking about it, and it seems to work in some cancers. We're finding that we can use immunotherapy when we combine it with either radiation therapy or combine it with chemotherapy or combine several different immunotherapies together to fight this cancer. And we're starting to see patients responding. Now, we're not talking about everybody, but we're starting to see some good responses, and we'll learn from who's responding so that we can make this even better. And when I say responding, I'm talking about patients who have metastatic cancer who have now failed chemotherapy. They've already gone through chemotherapy. So if you think about it from a more optimistic point of view, chemotherapy gets you 1 to 2 years on average, then maybe the next step will get you another, 1 to 2 years. So we're starting to turn this cancer, when it's advanced, into a chronic disease.
But everyone starts with chemo as the first line of treatment?
Yes, everyone starts with chemotherapy because the chemotherapy is good enough. The field believes, most medical oncologists believe, that it's definitely worth undergoing the chemotherapy to get that benefit.
You mentioned immunology. Tell us how that works.
So immunotherapy is a new type of therapy that now is available for some patients with metastatic cancers. Immunotherapy consists of agents that are able to activate the patient's own immune cells to see and kill their cancer. And so there are a number of agents now that are approved by the FDA. They're approved for lung cancer, for the treatment of melanoma, for the treatment of some kidney cancers. It's a new area that has really made a lot of progress. And immunotherapy, when it works, it's not working for a few months. It's really working for years in most patients. So the immune system is very powerful. If you can activate the immune system to see a patient's cancer, you have the ability to educate their immune system so that if the cancer tries to come back, the immune system, energizes and reacts right away. It's similar to when we give you a vaccine against the flu.
you're activating the immune system to prevent the flu. Well, in this case, you're activating the immune system to fight the cancer, but you're also educating cells so that if the cancer tries to come back, it can hopefully prevent that.
Pancreatic cancer is projected to become the second leading cause of cancer-related death by 2020. It's just a couple years from now. Why?
Yes, that's an excellent question. When I listen to discussions by epidemiologists who are the scientists who really study this question, part of the reason is that the baby boomers are reaching the age of getting cancer. And since we don't know how to screen early for this disease, baby boomers are getting more cancers. Pancreatic cancer is happening more often. It's gone up from, when I first started in the field 30 years ago, about 36,000 patients a year in the U.S. It's up to over 50,000 a year. And that's over the past 30 years. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it certainly is when you have a deadly disease. And it continues to increase. The problem is we haven't been able to find treatments that can prevent death. So still, the life expectancy for a pancreatic cancer patient with advanced cancer, as I mentioned, is only on average, 10 to 12 months. So the mortality rate is going up with the incidence rate.
Why is it that this disease gets less attention than other cancers, even though it is so deadly?
Yes, this cancer traditionally did not get a lot of attention because it wasn't that common. Again, when I first started, it was around 35,000 Americans a year. And although it was deadly, I think that we hadn't made progress in many cancers, and people were more focused on the more common cancers, breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer. The other issue is that we didn't have any advocates for this disease. And this was a big issue because if you look back at the 1990s when I was starting in cancer research, we had advocates for prostate cancer and for breast cancer. So they were fighting for more funding from the NIH and from other mechanisms.
And when you talk about advocates, often you're talking about somebody who had experienced
survivors,
the cancer.
Yes. And when you don't have survivors in a disease, it's very hard to make the case, right? Because they're dealing with their cancer and they're dying fast. So we didn't have anyone to say this is important to the funders. But fortunately for us, we've had a number of national groups now that have stepped up. And this happened in the late 1990s, early 2000s. And in particular, as you mentioned, the PanCAN, the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, and the Lustgarten Foundation. And both of these have helped to make to bring awareness of this cancer to the population, to the government, to the Congress, to the NIH, pushing for this disease to have more support, to find better answers for treatment, and also for understanding how it develops so we could eventually prevent this cancer. And I think that this is happening now. It's not happening at the level we would want it to, but I think it is. When I first started, there weren't many people in the field. I'm so happy to say that there are many new, young investigators in our field now because they see that there is support, there is funding to do good science and to test new therapies in patients.
What pulled you into research on pancreatic cancer?
I got into pancreatic cancer early on in my career. I had just become a young faculty member at Johns Hopkins. And I was thinking about, I definitely wanted to study the immune system to fight cancer, but I was thinking hard about what cancers really needed my help. And I had an uncle, my father's brother, who died of pancreatic cancer when I just started my medical training. And he lived for 3 months. And that was life-changing for our family. My cousins were young. This was a family that we got together every week with. Mm. And I thought, what better cancer than to work on this cancer and try to make a difference?
I'm grateful to you for giving us this overview. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe is an oncologist and deputy director of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins. Earlier, we heard from oncology nurse Meryl Bemnett. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we've got links to the Kimmel Center and to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.